We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Podcast. It is Wednesday, April 17th. We are in the thick, Brandon Kravitz, of the NBA play-in tournament. We had two great games, really one great game, I suppose, out west last night. We got two games in the east coming our way tonight. No games on Thursday. And then, of course, the long-awaited play-in tournament final, I guess, or last stand for a couple of teams on Friday before the real playoffs get underway Saturday, but we'll discuss all the news coming out of last night. We do have full schedules now, Brandon, for all of the first round series as well, which is always kind of fun. You know, it's not quite like the NCAA tournament bracket release or anything like that. But, you know, if you're a fan of one of these teams, it's nice to start mapping out, you know, where you're going to be watching, when you're going to be watching. Are you going to have to stream the game on the golf course, that type of thing? Luckily, I will probably be avoiding that with the Milwaukee Bucks, who will play Sunday evening. 7 p.m. Eastern for you, 6 p.m. for me. Got to be honest, Brandon, I'm not shocked that Magic Cavs got the noon Saturday slot. That's going to be a golf course streaming situation for me.
I mean, personally, forget about any sort of the notoriety or the platform of the game itself. Just on a personal level, I like those early games because I'm an early riser, so I'll still have breakfast with the family. And then now I have time to do some more prep for the game and then make my way to the studio. So I usually only do the home games. For the playoffs, I am working 100% of Magic games. So I'm in it, and then I'm done with my work day by like 4 p.m. and I still get, so I kind of like miss that middle part of the day when my 4-year-old is at its craziest. So honestly, as like a dad on the weekend, it works out great. So I like that. The issue for me is game three at home. Because if you notice that date, Thursday, April 25th, there's something else that's going on that day that's a pretty big deal in the sports world.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no. And I think that game starts like right as the NFL draft starts, doesn't it?
That is correct. Never in my life, I've been watching the draft since I think right when I got out of diapers. I've never missed the first round of the NFL draft. And I'm going to have to bite the bullet this year. Game three is more important.
I have a wedding next weekend. Luckily, Thursday will be open, so I should be clear for the first round. But, you know, you got like the Friday night event, you know, where everybody's kind of in town, you know, rubbing elbows, things of that nature. Hobnobbing, if you will. Yeah, I'm a little concerned about, you know, what the watching situation is going to be now that they're doing, you know, the staggered first two rounds. And I kind of remember the old days, and I'm sure you do as well, of like, you know, this was before, you know, you could mount multiple TVs in your basement. This was like, all right, all hands on deck, grab the TV from your parents' room, you know, get the 32-incher in the living room. And my buddy and I would always, you know, we'd play Madden on one TV for whatever reason and like do our own NFL draft and then watch the draft on the other. I kind of miss the 2-day marathon of like, you got to be locked in for like 10 hours both days.
I do too. I miss that a lot. I wish they'd go back to it. They never will. So yeah. I've just sort of moved past that. The one night, it's great, and it brings in a casual audience. There's so many people that, like, my wife loves watching the NFL draft. And like, when you think about it, why would anyone who's not obsessed with football care about watching this? They do a really good job making it this sort of feel good storytelling event, and then the emotion of the players and all of that. So it's become this big production. It fits perfectly in prime time. But yeah, for lifers like you and I and a lot of people listening to this, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, do not bother me. I'm not changing my clothes for 2 days. Yeah, you can't beat that. I love it.
Yeah, I don't. We won't talk too much about the NFL draft here on the RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Pod, but yeah, I have like core memories of like I had real takes of like DeBrickashaw Ferguson. He's the one, man. He's the next Jonathan Oden. Like for some reason, me as like a fifth grader, I was like so locked in because I probably saw one photo of him in like an Athlon NFL draft preview magazine, and it's. Yeah, we've come a long way. We've come a long way, man. But very much looking forward to the NFL draft. And you can check out all of our NFL draft coverage over at RotoWire. Our guys, Mario Puig, John McKechnie, they're doing an awesome job covering that on the RotoWire NFL podcast. And I'll be doing that later today with Joe Bartle, talking some draft as well. Let's talk about the games last night, Brandon. We'll start with Lakers-Pels. A kind of a roller coaster game here. I mean, there were multiple opportunities, I thought, for both teams to take control of this game. You know, got off to a pretty even start. I think it was 21-20 midway through the first quarter, high scoring game early on. Then the Pelicans jumped out to a 10-11 point lead. He started to wonder, all right, you know, Zion looks like he's having maybe his best game of the year, honestly. He was kind of the only guy who really showed up start to finish for the Pelicans. And then the Lakers, you know, opened up, you know, a double digit lead multiple times in the second half. Always felt like they were like one Taurean Prince missed three pointer away from really breaking it open. And they kept leaving the door open, Pelicans rallied back. This was a really, really close game late. A lot of bad possessions, I thought, offensively for the Lakers. They got away with some bad shots. You know, LeBron basically, you know, airballs what could have been the game-sealing jumper, you know, with two guys draped all over him. Incredible rebound by Anthony Davis to grab that, get fouled. Disappointing night, of course, for the Pelicans. And you know, I think the Zion situation is obviously what we'll be monitoring most as we look ahead to Friday. And it didn't look good, man. It did not look good. It was a strange situation because, you know, Zion obviously knew right away something was up, but there was not a noticeable limp or anything to me. You know, he kind of buried his head in his jersey. He made his way to the bench, made his way to the locker room, didn't seem to be favoring that hamstring, but the way he reacted,
he
kind of feel like it was, what do they call it? Leg soreness. I don't think he's just dealing with a sore leg. And Stan Van Gundy did a good job on the call of kind of calling out the Pelicans. Like, yeah, I don't think it was a sore leg that just kept him out for the end of that game. And if there's no Zion for the Pels on Friday, I think you got to feel pretty good if you're Sacramento.
I mean, he was the best player in that game. And I'm talking about a game that had LeBron James in it. That was,
awesome.
It was so cool. And he's been doing that sort of thing throughout the course of the season. But because the shine was off Zion after he got drafted, there was all that hype. He didn't follow through on that hype. And the Pelicans and Zion sort of faded to the background, and he became old news. And we saw it throughout the course of the season. You could tell he took his fitness more seriously. He was playing much better, much more consistent. He was available. And this was just such a great showcase for him. And to do it up against the Lakers and LeBron James, it just felt like what we had been waiting for since 2019. So it was a great sort of culmination effort. And then it's ruined by this injury. And I'm convinced, and I had the Lakers last night, so I wanted this result. But I'm convinced the Lakers were going to blow that game if Zion didn't get hurt. Last 2 minutes. And it wasn't just Zion. Brandon Ingram was in and out of the lineup. So they were just down too many guys. It's obvious what the Pelicans need to do moving forward, but they still have another game to play. So I'm not going to get into offseason moves for New Orleans. But man, Zion, if he doesn't play, they don't have a chance against Sacramento.
I agree, man. I agree. And I think they know it too, right? I mean, you could, again, I think Zion knows it. I think the Pelicans know it. I mean, the way CJ McCollum played last night, he was rough, man. It was really, really rough for McCollum. It, you know, added a couple baskets late to make that line look a little bit better, but 1 of 9 from three. You know, they continue to kind of yo-yo with Jonas Valanciunas at center. He played a lot more minutes last night than he ended up playing on Sunday in the, you know, the finale, but you know, they've kind of can't really make a decision on him. I thought Larry Nance, you know, gave them a nice boost. Jose Alvarado, who is just a pest. I'm not an Alvarado guy. I just want to put it out there. That's not my type of player. Look, if he was on the Bucks, much like Pat Bev, I've had to come around on Pat Beverly. It's just the ultimate. If he's on your team, you love him. If he's not on your team, you're like, get this guy out of the league type of player. But he gave them a huge boost, not even necessarily defensively, where I thought he did a good job, but as a penetrator, as a passer, there was a stretch right before Zion went out where both teams were trading baskets. And it felt like the Lakers, especially, it's like, if they could just get one stop, man, like if they could get one stop, they could probably put this game away. And they couldn't do it, partially because Alvarado kept getting by D'Angelo Russell, getting into the lane, making things happen. So, really it was Zion, it was Alvarado, it was Larry Nance, and to some degree, Trey Murphy, who, only had 12 points on 10 shots, but hit a couple huge deep threes, both at key periods to kind of lessen that gap for New Orleans.
And Reggie Miller was blown away with the arc that Trey Murphy was putting on some of those three balls. So I think that was the way that they spotlighted that through the broadcast made it seem pretty big as well. But it's funny you mentioned that, because Alvarado actually had arguably the most important turnover of the entire game. 90 seconds left. He goes to kick it out to the corner. Fellow Pelicans standing there waiting for an open three. And D'Angelo Russell just comes out of absolutely nowhere with that one-handed steal. And then the Lakers are able to score on the other end. And that at that point, they made it 101-99. And then D'Angelo Russell hit the three on the next Lakers possession. And that was it. The Pelicans.
I thought he was going to get teed up, by the way. Set.
Who for D'Angelo?
Russell, after he hit that three, because the ref was right there, and he spent some time showboating, chatting with the Pelicans bench.
That's one of the coolest things you can do in basketball is hit the big three next to the opponent's bench and let them know about it. Love that.
Yeah, and then get the timeout so you have some time to chit chat over there. And Russell embraced that.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
I thought really in both games, the refs were letting everything go, especially in the late game. I mean, the first half of Kings Warriors was a rock fight. I mean, it was just like both teams were, I think, in awe of the lack of calls, which has been a hallmark of the second half of the season. But I thought really in general, the rim defense for both teams, all four teams, I suppose, that played last night was really impressive. And yes, they're letting them play, they're letting them get away with more than they were early in the season, but there were so few easy baskets, especially late in Lakers Pels and really for the duration of Kings Warriors. Like you talk about that play where Alvarado ended up turning it over. Incredible steal by Russell, but I thought incredible job by Austin Reeves to get in front and force Alvarado, who looked like he had a wide open layup. And, you know, I saw it on replay. I'm like, man, Alvarado should have just taken that. Not really, man. I mean, Reeves did an incredible job of kind of cutting him off midair, getting his body in front of him, forcing him to make that tough pass, and then a great interception by D'Angelo Russell. So big picture-wise here, obviously this now means the Lakers will face the Nuggets in round one. They did not intentionally lose this game to face OKC. I think given the result of the late game, had the Lakers lost, they probably would have been okay playing Sacramento. But again, that's a 50-50 in these scenarios, especially the way Sacramento played last night. We'll look at the series line here for Nuggets Lakers. Denver -310 to win the series. Yeah. You can get the Lakers to win straight up at +250. We'll get game one of that series, I believe, on Saturday, and the Nuggets are 6.5-point home favorites.
That sounds about right. The Lakers are up against it. The Nuggets in playoff mode are a completely different animal now. And the way that Jokic really found himself in a big way last postseason, it's just such a tough matchup for LA because, you know, Anthony Davis is great when he's at his best, but he tends to shrink in those sort of those big battles with other great
men. I didn't think he was very good last night, by the way. Made a couple of big, you know, big rebounds, hit some big free throws late. This was one of those, like, did he do like a 25 milligram gummy type of games for like three quarters for AD? Like I think he had 6 points at the half. I mean, this is a matchup that he's dominated, right? I mean, this was kind of I thought we'd see a huge AD game, and he just didn't look comfortable. He didn't finish well. And yeah, you're right. I mean, against the Nuggets, you're asking a ton of Anthony. Like, you need Anthony Davis to basically match Nikola Jokic. Maybe not in terms of statistics. You know, he's not going to give you a 30, 10, and 10 like Jokic will probably do for this series. But you need Anthony Davis to be all-world level defender for probably 6 or 7 games if the Lakers have any shot.
Yeah, he just has to work a little too hard. Like, he's great when he can dominate a matchup. He's not dominating this one, and it just kind of cuts the Lakers out at their knees. LeBron's amazing. The Lakers are going to, you know, I don't think they're going to look overmatched every single time out, but they're going to look overmatched enough to where if I told you you had to take the Nuggets in 6, I think you'd feel uncomfortable about it. So minus, I'm not going to bet it because I'm not trying to lay that kind of juice, but I would just lay, I'm laying off of that series price, and maybe I'll pick my spots on actually betting the side for the Nuggets. Game one feels like a good spot if you want to bet Denver with LA coming off of that hard-fought game and at home in the altitude, as we always have to use that reference. But Anthony Davis, by the way, definitely upset with him. Last night, I had my RotoWire prop picks that I was keyed in on.
20.5.
Anthony Davis, 15.5 rebounds plus assists. He had 15 rebounds and 0 assists. I needed one single assist. One. Couldn't get it.
So I had a prize picks entry going as well. They were running an Anthony Davis discount. So you just needed 20.5 points from Anthony Davis. He finished at exactly 20. We needed 12.5 points from Trey Murphy. He finished at exactly 12. And then we had 5.5 assists for D'Angelo Russell, which hit like early in the second quarter. He had 4 assists in the first like 5 minutes of game time and somehow finished at 6. So it wasn't like that was a slam dunk necessarily. But yeah, it's right. I mean, we love Prize Picks. Not going to say anything negative about Prize Picks, but when the promos don't hit, that's when you know you might be in for a rough night. I also had a baseball entry going where, you know, our producer on SXM, Ani, was like, I got a feeling this is going to be the Ronald Acuna night. He's hitting a home run. So I'm watching that game on one of the TVs. And Acuna,
pitching duel. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Braves were up 6-0, and top of the ninth, Acuna comes up for one final at bat and hits like the hardest ball he's hit all year, and it goes foul by like 6 inches. And then you're like, all right, he's right on it. Next pitch gets beaned, walk. It's like,
you know, the good news
for Acuna without a homer.
Yeah, the good news with something like that is that you know your head's in the right place. Right. Sometimes the result's not going to follow, but is my read right? If you're off by a couple of inches, hey, you know, you did your part. Now the player has to come through with theirs.
Yeah, my head's always in the right place. I've never made a bad bet. The players just don't come through. That's the issue, right? It's not me. It is definitely not me. Looking at Lakers Nuggets in terms of schedule, they'll play game one on Saturday night. That's the 8:30 p.m. Eastern tip. I absolutely love I think this is a super underrated sports weekend, by the way. I know it's not going to be on the Mount Rushmore. You know, we just had the Masters last week, NCAA tournament, all that. You know, NFL divisional conference weekend, those are up there. But if you're an NBA guy, like, opening weekend of the playoffs is the best, especially when we have as much parity as we do this season, right? Where there's not really a bad series. Like, I know a lot of people would say, oh yeah, you know, Cleveland, Orlando, that's like the Houston Texans, you know, Saturday morning playoffs wild card spot. Like, I get that, but it's still a really intriguing series, right? Like, I'm excited to watch that. If that's the worst series we have, whatever, I'll take it. So Lakers Nuggets game one Saturday, game two Monday. So pretty quick turnaround. You know, some of these series, like OKC, for example, they'll play game one Sunday. Game two is not until Wednesday. So this could be a dicey situation for the Lakers. You know, you got to play twice in 3 days in Denver. Obviously, you feel like you need to get one of those games to hang around in this series. And then you have a couple off days before game three in LA on Thursday. But very much looking forward to watching that one. We'll get into, you know, some more of these series breakdowns later in the pod. But we got to talk Kings Warriors. I was really surprised by what we saw last night, Brandon. The Kings winning in a blowout to me was probably the least likely of the four outcomes, as far as like Kings win close, Warriors blow out, Kings blow out. This game turned into a laugher, right? I mean, it got uglier late than it was throughout the game. I thought the Kings got off to an incredible start. You know, there were a couple times early on where you felt like they almost were going to put this game away, like in the second quarter. I mean, they were up, I think, 17 at one point. And the Kings have a terrible close to the second quarter. They committed some bad fouls. Warriors have it down to four. Steph almost banks in like a 60-footer that would have cut it to one just before the half. And you're thinking, all right, the Warriors played a horrible first half. They turned it over. They couldn't hit anything. The Kings played really well, and somehow they're only up four. Man, you don't feel good about this if you're Sacramento. I thought the Kings put together an incredible third quarter, an even better start to the fourth quarter. Keegan Murray, 8 3-pointers for him. Could have had more. You know, he goes 8 of 13 from three, and he missed like three wide, wide open threes. You know, he was hitting some of his tougher looks and missed some of the open ones. Sabonis, you know, the numbers didn't look that great. 16 and 12 for him. You know, for Domantas Sabonis, that's not going to go down as a remarkable game. I thought Draymond Green got away with a lot against Sabonis. I think Sabonis would agree with me on that. But still, probably the best game he's played against the Warriors specifically this season, which has been a tough matchup for him. De'Aaron Fox was great. Keon Ellis, you know, felt like he had more than 15 points. Felt like every single basket he hit came at a huge time for the Sacramento Kings. And then, of course, on the other side, not a great game from Steph. You know, Keon Ellis did a fantastic job chasing him around. That was about as well as anybody's defended Curry this season, as far as chasing him around screens, not giving him anything easy. Klay Thompson, man, if this is his final game as a Warrior, this is rough. I absolutely love Klay, one of my all-time favorite players in the NBA, despite, you know, kind of finding myself rooting against him in a lot of series. Yeah, I was not a huge fan of the Kevin Durant Warriors. I'll say that, but I've always loved Klay. You know, you saw the video of him like leaving the court after the game, and you know, everybody else is going to the locker room. He took a moment to kind of turn around and take everything in. I think he knows the same thing we do, that there's a decent chance that he's not back with this team next year, and absolutely hate to see him go out the way he did if this is how it ends.
And it's, I mean, come on, it's over. What we watched last night was beyond a basketball game. That was a funeral. That team is going to be in some form dismantled and changed. And you know, they're not going to move off of Steph. He's 36. He's still great at what he does. And he is the icon of that franchise. Draymond Green, they're kind of stuck with his contract. But, you know, they'll try and morph this into maybe less of a hybrid of old and new, and try and have it be Steph and new. But they've definitely got a lot of work to do. I'm curious to see what happens with Klay Thompson as far as what kind of deal he ends up signing and where he signs it. I'd be shocked if this guy is with the Golden State Warriors. But it's definitely, it's over. You know, that he's a shooting specialist that's not making shots. I don't know how you pay a guy like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really difficult. You don't want to put too much stock into this one game. You know, it's like, if you're the Warriors and you're on the fence about bringing Klay back, I mean, it's like, I think the last 12 years should mean a lot more than one random play-in game against the Sacramento Kings when he had like his worst game arguably of his career. I think this was, I saw a stat last night. It was like the first time since his rookie year that he hasn't made a field goal, which is pretty incredible, right? I mean, you think of how many games Klay Thompson has played, and it's not like he's a guy that's, you know, launching 20 shots a game. It's like, you'd think sometime in the last 10 years that would have happened. The question is he willing, is he willing to accept less than market value to remain with Golden State? And the every indication that Clay has given is that he wouldn't be willing to do that. And then the other question is, you know, which team is going to be out there with that Trump offer? You could totally see it, like the Chicago Bulls, you know, it's like that. This would be like such a Bulls signing to be like, yeah, let's throw the, you know, close to the max to Clay Thompson. Like there will be a team out there, right? Like there are these.
No, there can no way. There's a team out there that gives him the max. That's just, not going to happen.
Maybe not the max, but I think a team that would be willing to offer him more than Golden State would. Maybe
that'll definitely be the case.
Or money. Yeah. Like, I mean, think about it. Detroit's got all this cap space. Charlotte, like there are desperate franchises out there that maybe care more about name value and can talk themselves into something. Like this happens every single offseason, right? Like we see terrible signings year in and year out. I don't know why that would just suddenly change.
I think you're right that somebody's going to bring him in at a higher dollar amount than Golden State. Golden State has to start being smart with their money. They've been hanging around in the luxury tax for years. And when you're winning, it's worth it. You're selling the tickets. Yep. You're winning games. You've got championships and trophies you're adding to the trophy case. That's what paying for the tax. That's why owners pay the tax. If you're not doing that, you got to get out of that business. Boston right now is so tax heavy. Well, they're in championship mode. I don't know what mode the Warriors are in, but they can't afford to pay Klay Thompson as much as another team would. There'd be a lot of teams out there with cap space that you're right will want to add Klay because they want to see if they can find a bit of that fountain of youth. And they're going to, and you know, they're going to sell this. Just wait till the introductory press conference. Championship pedigree. Guaranteed that is a two-word phrase that you will hear in whatever East Coast city ends up overpaying for Klay Thompson.
It's going to be very weird to see him in a non-Warriors uniform if that does indeed come to fruition. I mean, this is like Scottie Pippen on the Rockets, Scottie Pippen on the Blazers type of thing. And yeah, it really, really felt like, I mean, you said the word funeral. That's what that the end of the fourth quarter looked like, right? When in, you know, Sacramento's just raining three after three, Golden State can't buy a bucket. You know, if there's any silver lining here for the Warriors, I think it's that their second and third best players in this game were Jonathan Kuminga and Moses Moody, who both played really well. Kuminga, especially, I think Kuminga single-handedly almost brought them back into this game just before halftime, you know, cut that deficit from 13 to 15 down to four at the half. So the cupboard is not completely bare here, right? And I thought BA on the call last night did a pretty good job outlining that. You know, it was he kept kind of eulogizing the Warriors and then at the same time saying like, well, you know, it's not a total clean out, right? I mean, they have Draymond locked in. They obviously are not doing anything with Stephen Curry. So I'm confident that the Warriors can find a way to reset this. It's just, what does that ceiling end up being? Like, it's hard for me to find a path to the Warriors going from, you know, squeaking their way into the play-in, losing in the play-in, and then are we going to go into next year saying, all right, they're going to make another run at the title? You know, part of it is the lack of flexibility for Golden State. The other part of it is, like, the bar is really high right now in the Western Conference, not even to be a title contender, but just to be like a non-play-in team.
Right. Yeah, they need to really trip into a player that makes a big-time impact that they don't have to spend a lot either in draft equity or via free agency because they're not going to have the money to do it. They're going to have to fall into someone. I think about, like, it's a loose analogy because the NFL is so different with roster building, but the way that the Rams were so up against it cap-wise and then all of a sudden just drafted Puka Nacua, and he completely fixed their offense because it gave you that other element, you know, between Puka and Kyren Williams, and all of a sudden they've got a revamped team off of two really cheap draft picks. It's harder to do that in the NBA, but I think the Warriors need something like that to happen where they get really good in a very cheap and almost lucky sort of way.
I think you can make the case that like almost every team that has, you know, ascended or, you know, kind of made that leap from middle zone up to title contention, like you almost everybody catches a break like that, right? Like that's kind of the way it has to work in the NBA. So you have your stars, and then, you know, if you're the Lakers, you find an Austin Reeves type of player who just turns into, you know, your third guy, right? Like you can find these examples throughout the NBA, and it's a lot to ask, right? I mean, you could argue that they already did that with Draymond Green when they drafted him back in the day, right? It's like those are the type of hits that you need to make to become a dominant team, and they don't have their first round pick now. You know, it was top four protected. They were never going to have it in general, but they're now sending a lottery pick to the Portland Trailblazers who own that pick. I think it was exchanged in like when they had Drew Holiday for like a day before they shipped him out. You know, somehow Golden State's pick got involved in that. So they don't even have a first round pick in the 2024 draft. And yeah, maybe it's not a great draft. You don't feel great about finding a gem there, but you don't have a ton of flexibility. You don't even have the option to pick anybody. You don't have the option to trade that pick. So their flexibility will be pretty limited this offseason. Looking at Kings Pelicans for Friday, Pelicans sitting as a 1-point favorite right now at DraftKings.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't do anything with this right now unless you want to go ahead and take Sacramento where they stand, and then maybe the line. I think Sacramento maybe becomes the favorite if Zion is officially announced as out. But if Zion plays and you want to take Sacramento, then you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot because that line's going to move by probably 2 points. And so it really just depends on Zion. I think the Kings, I love the way they played. I mean, they played well defensively. Yep. They were sighted in from the field, and having a guy like Keegan Murray step up the way that he did, they got a lot of contributions from those role guys. De'Aaron Fox, by the way, might be the best. You can't call it a stealer, right? The best thief in the NBA. I just love the way that he's able to completely dominate whatever sort of guard matchup he gets. I mean, he was stealing the ball from Steph Curry last night. That is
both he and Keon Ellis had like straight up rips of
it's Curry, amazing.
You almost never see. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was like magician levels of like, I didn't even see him touch the ball. All of a sudden he's running down in the fast break. And I don't need to tell you that the New Orleans Pelicans do not have guard play as skilled as what the Golden State Warriors have. So the Kings should be able to dominate that matchup. I'm not a fan of New Orleans home court advantage. I think it worked against it. It just didn't really work in their favor the same way. I mean, look, we had two games that were great examples of what home court advantage can mean when you don't have it and what it can mean when you do have it. Sacramento, what a vibe that place is. And then compare that to New Orleans in the earlier window. It's night and day. So I don't even – New Orleans is one of those teams. I don't even factor that in. But it really comes down to Zion. Right now I would take Sacramento and – but I'm guessing Zion's got to play, right?
I don't know, man. His reaction scared me. Right. And again,
could have also just been knowing that there's 3 minutes left in the game and I'm not going to be able to come back for this one.
I just think in that spot, it's like, if you know you're not coming back in that game, to me, it implies that it's something serious enough that could you feel confident about playing 3 days later? I don't know. I mean, I don't know. He's getting an MRI probably right now. We're going to find out, you know, in the next couple hours, what the diagnosis is on that hamstring. And you're right. If he's ruled out, I think we see that number move. It's still a winnable game for the Pelicans, right? I mean, I think if you're the Pels, but you're without Zion, I certainly would favor the Kings. I think that's maybe a 70-30 type of game for Sacramento. But I think if you're the Pels, you're saying, all right, CJ McCollum's not going to play that bad again. You need more out of Brandon Ingram. I think that's the other thing. It's like Ingram was almost invisible last night. Played only 25 minutes, 4 of 12 from the field, just still doesn't look quite right. And I think if you're taking Zion away and you're saying that you have like a 75% version of Brandon Ingram, that's where it becomes pretty tough to decide with New Orleans. But I think you also look at the Kings last night and you say, all right, you know, we're not going to let Keon Ellis kill us the way that he did. You know, he's probably not, you know, hitting three. He's not going 3 for 4 from three. Keegan Murray, 8 of 13 from three. Like there was, I'm not saying it's flukiness. Like Keegan Murray's had those games before. He's one of the best spot up shooters in the NBA, but I don't think the Pelicans just lay down here. I think we would still get a pretty competitive game. Do you have, in terms of which of these teams could push OKC in the 1-8 matchup, is there a matchup that you'd rather see in round one?
Well, first of all, I think it's worth mentioning the Pelicans have won 5 in a row in this series. They played five times this year.
which there's a great quote, by the way, from De'Aaron Fox after the game when he was being interviewed on TNT. And he said, he kind of said it with like a laugh. He's like, well, you know, it's hard to beat a team 6 times in a row.
Very true. Very true. And I don't want to be totally blinded by, if I'm just going off of what I watched last night, Sacramento feels like the right play no matter what, but I would take a step back and breathe for a minute. So I'm going to wait to get a Zion report.
Okay.
Because it's not going to fluctuate that much. But as far as against OKC, I love this for OKC because I think they match up really well with either one of these teams. So I would rather see, I think the Kings are more fun to watch personally. So I would rather watch the Kings and the Thunder. I think it would be a more electrifying series. But either one, if Zion's healthy, I'll take either one. If Zion's not healthy, definitely give me Kings Thunder. But I think the Thunder beat either one of them.
Yeah, I think that would be the worst case scenario as like an NBA fan would be the Zion's out for a couple weeks and they somehow win this game and then go into round one without like without Zion. Like that would be the kind of the worst case.
I think that would be, and I understand that I'm biased because objectively the worst series in the first round is Magic Cavs. I get it. Okay. But I care a lot about that. So
yep.
I'm good with it. But if the Pelicans without Zion played the Thunder in round one, that zooms to the top of the list.
Yep.
And I don't think there's a bad series on the board. That's one of the things when you talk about this weekend being a holiday for NBA fans, usually we've got a stinker in there. There's no stinker. All of these series are going to be really intriguing. Even the Celtics, you know, the Celtics is the strongest one seed in the NBA. They're probably going to end up getting the Heat. That's a good series. So there really isn't a bad one on the board.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the schedule for Saturday, you know, Magic Cavs, obviously that's our early game. But then you get, I mean, Suns Wolves in the mid-afternoon. We get Knicks against either the Heat or the Sixers. In the, you know, kind of the dinner time slot, and then Lakers Nuggets in primetime on Saturday. Sunday we'll get Celtics against likely one of the Sixers or the Heat. Could be the Hawks, could be the Bulls. We'll give them their respect. Mavs Clippers mid-afternoon Sunday. That's going to be a, you know, clear the calendar, sit down for that one. Pacers Bucks in the evening window, and then OKC and either Sacramento or New Orleans finishing it out on Sunday. So yeah, I'm extremely, extremely excited for the weekend and the week ahead. Let's talk about the play-in games that we have coming at us tonight. The Philadelphia 76ers are up to 5.5-point favorites. That line moved right after we got the Terry Rozier news that he will not be available for the play-in game. And this is just kind of how it goes for Miami, man. Somebody's always down for this team. And, you know, Duncan Robinson, they could be without him as well. He missed some time to conclude the regular season. Everybody seems to be on Philly here. We got a low total at 207.5. Does feel like a rock fight type of game. You know, I'm not going to go too far against the grain here. I think Philly wins, but we've seen this so many times with Miami, man. Even last year, they lost the play-in. People forget that. They were in the win-or-go-home scenario before making that run to the NBA Finals. So I'm not crossing off Miami here, but it does feel like this is breaking pretty well for the Sixers.
It's definitely breaking well for the Sixers, and they're rolling right now. But I am not about to lay money against Miami in this situation. Not going to do it. I'll take the cushion. I haven't done it yet because anytime I fade Joel Embiid, he typically has one of his best games. So I'm going to play the cautious role. I also think with so much money, I was looking at the betting splits. There's like no money on Miami right now. So I think the number could actually climb up to 6. You know, we're only a half point away there. But I'm going to be on Miami tonight. And I'll take the points. Chances are, though, if they keep it close, they're going to win the game. So I don't really like splitting my bets, but if you out there like doing, if you think Miami's going to cover, you might as well put a little money on the money line, too, because playoff Jimmy in a tight game situation, come on. But no, I think this will be a good game. Bam Adebayo typically plays Joel Embiid well, and I don't like that Terry Rozier is out, but you do get the point discount with that. And look, Caleb Martin, not the guy he was last year, but it's playoff time. Different Heat team. Let's just blindly put your faith in Miami in the playoffs, and usually you'll end up profitable.
I'm going to be interested to see how this game is officiated because Joel Embiid, you know, since coming back, he's still been getting the whistle, right? And, you know, he draws a lot of contact. I'm not saying anything nefarious is going on, but you know, in the 5 games that he's played, his free throw attempts have been 12, 5, which ironically came against Miami, 13, 10, 9, right? But then, you know, you watch these games last night. I know the Lakers got to the line like 29 times, but that's the Lakers. That's what they do. The late game especially, you know, if they let Bam Adebayo get physical with Joel Embiid, I think that will be huge for Miami. If they don't, if Embiid, you know, has 8 free throw attempts in the first half, then I think Philly and Embiid probably find a way to bleed out Miami, you know, over the course of 48 minutes. But I'm with you. I wouldn't, if that number gets to 6, no way. If anything, I think that's too high. I would take Miami to keep this game close. And I don't mind a little sprinkle on the money line either, plus 180 right now at DraftKings. And, you know, I think either of these teams, it's not going to be a full-on panic if they lose because they know who's waiting in that next game. It's either the Bulls or an extremely banged up Atlanta Hawks team. But I also think, you know, there's significant motivation to win this game. There's no question of like, well, should the Lakers try to lose this so they don't have to play Denver? It's like, no, you want to win this game so you don't have to play Boston.
Yeah, either one of these teams is a decent shot to make it to round two if they don't get Boston in the first round. I'm not a huge Knicks believer without Julius Randle. I think they're I love Jalen Brunson. We all do. But I think their lineup overall is just not strong enough going up against teams like this that have playoff experience the way that Miami does, big-time playoff performer in Jimmy Butler and the 76ers, who are hotter than anybody else in the NBA right now. It's a different sort of matchup than Boston, which feels like this is their year to run through the gauntlet and make it to the finals. That's a very interesting game. It's a low total, too, so that sort of implies a close, grinded-out kind of game if you think it's going to be played out that way. But Miami feels like the right side. The other game, obviously less interesting, might catch up on some sleep for that one. We'll see what happens, but it's still NBA action. So I can't look any other way but Chicago. Where do you sit on the later one?
I actually think the number's 3.5 right now at ESPN Bet. It's holding at 3 at DraftKings. I think I would just take the points with Atlanta here, to be honest. I mean, where are we? It's the Chicago Bulls. Are we ever confident in this team? I don't know, man. I mean, I think if Atlanta, the way I phrased it to Alex on Monday was, I think if both teams play their best game, I think Atlanta wins. I think they have slightly higher offensive upside. I think Chicago has a higher floor. You know, it's like if both teams play their B game, then maybe Chicago wins. But you know, the thing with Atlanta is, you know, Chicago's not really dealing with injuries outside of the guys who've been hurt all year, right? Like, this has been their team for the season, essentially. You know, Zach LaVine hasn't played in forever. Obviously, they didn't have Lonzo. They've been without Patrick Williams for a while. But Atlanta, you know, you just recently reintroduced Trae Young. You know, you don't have Jalen Johnson, which is huge. You don't have Okongwu, which is huge. But I think you have on paper the best player in this game in Trae Young. And you know, apologies to DeMar DeRozan, who's been great in these type of situations throughout his career. But I think we get a close game here. And I certainly would not be surprised if the Atlanta Hawks win this game. So I'm just going to, like, if Chicago was a 3.5-point dog, I would take them. I just want the points. I think this is a 50-50 type of game. Both of these teams are so unpredictable.
So one of my favorite stats throughout the course of the year is that no team in the NBA played more overtime games than the Chicago Bulls. The Bulls also, in those situations, did really well. I think their record in overtime games is like 7-4. And then the last game of the season for them against the Knicks went to overtime. So that's sort of been their theme. And to get to overtime, you got to play in a close game. So this is what Chicago does. Taking them minus points definitely makes me want to throw up a little bit. But Trae Young has not been good for this Atlanta Hawks team this year. You know, one of the quietly one of the big stories for this. They're 22-32 when he plays. They're 14-14 without him. They are worse. They win 40% of their games this season with Trae Young in the lineup, and 50% of their games without him in the lineup. The team runs better through DeJounte Murray. As good as Young.
You're not going to talk me into the Bulls just like dominating this game. It's just not going
to
happen.
I'm just trying to talk you off of Atlanta. That's the move.
Both of these teams are bad, dude. Like, anything could happen here. I don't know. Like, I thought Sacramento was going to lose last night, and they almost won by 30. You know, like, anything is on the table here. I'm just saying.
I agree. I was on the Warriors, too. I get it. I'm wrong all the time. But this one, I don't know. This is a very light play, by the way. This is just a little sprinkle.
Like an eighth of a unit.
Maybe. I mean, at the point you're betting an eighth of a unit, you might as well just lay off. Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Maybe there's two different scenarios here, you know, depending on who wins this early game tonight between the Sixers and the Heat. Are either of those teams favored to win the series against New York?
Philly definitely is. Yeah, Miami is so not. Too.
Really? I think if Miami wins, it would be like -110 either way. Philly, I think if they win, to me it would mirror almost what we're seeing with Suns Timberwolves, where everything is telling you that the Timberwolves are the better team. They've been the better team for 82 games, and yet the Phoenix Suns are favored to win that series. And I think the Knicks would kind of get that same type of market where they would be slight dogs against Philly, even though they've been the better team. They've been more consistent. And obviously Philly is a unique situation where, you know, we don't really think of them as a 7 or an 8 seed when they're at full strength. That's not where they would have finished had Embiid stayed healthy. But I'm not writing the Knicks off against either of those teams. I think New York is going to come into that series expecting to win.
Yeah, no, they're going to push whoever they play. That's for sure. I think that you would get I think you'd get a similar line in both, but reversed. So I would say it's like a right around Knicks minus 150 against the Heat. Heat around like plus 125, if that's the way that they split it. So you get like slight plus money on betting Miami to win the series, and then it would be reversed if it was Philly. It would be like Philly minus 150, Knicks plus 125. I think they would be priced similarly, just in opposite directions, but Philly would definitely be favored. Philly would be, we all know this. This is not a secret. Philly would be the two seed if Joel Embiid never got hurt. This is they're a fictitious seven if they're able to get the win tonight. What I'm curious about is what would the series price be if Philly loses and then wins the next game and plays Boston in round one? That's interesting.
Yeah, that, I mean, Boston, I would guess, would be close to minus 200. I don't think it would be as extreme as Denver LA, where we got.
So that's what I was going to say. You'd have to use Denver LA as a baseline for what you can expect.
Maybe minus 250 for the Celtics. I don't know.
So there's more, you'd say there's more confidence if Boston plays Philly, you'd have more confidence that Denver would beat LA than Boston would beat Philly.
To me, it's close to equal. I personally think there's less of a chance of Boston losing, but I think the market has more respect for Philly than maybe I do, because I think I'm weighing more heavily the fact that Embiid has just never played like MVP Joel Embiid in the playoffs, you know? And I think this, there's a, you know, everybody's getting wrapped up in the narrative, like Embiid's back, man. Hey, this is a dangerous seven seed, dangerous eight seed. I mean, obviously they are. I'm not saying they can't win that series, but there's a long, long history of Joel Embiid not being able to replicate that in the playoffs. And you know, I think the way Boston closed the season maybe threw a little bit of cold water on just how dominant they've been. You know, the Milwaukee loss, the weird loss to the Knicks. This team is a juggernaut, man. I think there's a real chance that, you know, whether it's Miami or Philly, I wouldn't say it's a sweep, but I think Boston wins both of those series in five games.
Wow. Yeah. I think the price might be a little more similar to Denver LA than we would think, but we'll see. We'll see who they end up matched up with. Hopefully it's not Chicago or Atlanta and we can actually get a good series.
Yeah. And the path sets up really well for Boston as well. You know, if you start to look at the futures, you know, they'll get the winner of Cavs Magic, assuming they can get out of round one, and we'll see who's left for them in the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, there is a world in which like their toughest series is round one. Like that's very possible. You know, I think especially if it's Philly or really Miami. I don't know. I can't quit this Miami team. I know that this is the third year in a row where they've just looked so average, but we're not getting tricked into that again.
They have more wins this year than they had last year at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. That is true. I'm starting to come around on just betting the Pacers to win this series straight up against Milwaukee. I wish I would have done it 5 days ago when you could get them at, you know, a pretty nice price. It's now minus 110 either way. The vibes are so bad, man. So bad. I would, if I could bet on 3 weeks from now, we get a Chris Haynes 2000 word essay about why Damian Lillard never fit in Milwaukee and why he's not happy. That's what I would bet right now. It's my favorite bet on the board.
What would the price be for Giannis requesting a trade? What kind of price would we get on that?
I know Wendy put that out. Wendy put that out yesterday on ESPN, which is like the 20th time that he sounded that alarm. It's a possibility. I wouldn't say it's a likelihood, but it's a possibility, right? I mean, you know, it kind of felt like when he signed the extension, but like, you know, early on in the year, we're like, all right, we don't have to worry about that anymore. I don't know, man. I mean, Giannis is addicted to trying to win, right? And I think he's already laid the breadcrumbs these last couple of years, and you see this with so many, like how many guys have, you know, early in their career, you think about like how we used to talk about Kawhi with the Spurs. It was like, man, he is the perfect Spur. He's got the same demeanor as Tim Duncan. This is going to be great. Nobody ever saw Kawhi. Like, it was crazy that Kawhi Leonard would ever force his way out of San Antonio. It's a possibility. It really is. You know, I think if Giannis sees the writing on the wall, especially if they lose in round one. And I don't know where you draw the line. Like, where do you say, okay, this was a successful season, I feel good about next year? It's like Chris Middleton's not getting any better. Brooke Lopez is not getting any better. Doesn't seem like Damian Lillard is getting any better. Like, the writing is on the wall here for Milwaukee. And if this season fizzles out, you could find reasons why. You know, like if Giannis misses two or three games in round one and they don't beat the Pacers, like there's a pretty obvious reason for that. But I also think going in, you could just tell, like the way that the Bucks players talk about this team, the way that they look on the court. Like, I don't think they feel like a team that expects to win the finals right now.
No, not at all. That's why I was happy to fade them once the immediately after the line opened. I feel great about it. I do think that we just found the fix for the Golden State Warriors, though. Could be Giannis.
Yeah, sign and trade for Clay. That would be.
That's it. Set yourself up for the future over there.
This is the price you pay when you're in win now mode. Like the stakes are high, man.
Win now mode and you don't win, then heads roll and players request to get out. It happens everywhere.
It happens in all sports. I mean, I think, you know, here in Wisconsin, we went through that for basically a decade with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, right? And it rarely ends well. You know, sometimes your quarterback becomes a conspiracy theorist and all of a sudden he's playing for the New York Jets. So hopefully Giannis doesn't go down that road. Hopefully there's, you know, no questioning about like the AIDS epidemic or you know, where the vaccines are coming from. Giannis seems to be on the straight and narrow as far as that goes. But yeah, anything's on the table for Milwaukee. I mean, this has been the day they traded for Dame Lillard. I was so excited. I was like, this is such a perfect fit. Everybody was saying it. It's like, man, you couldn't draw up a better fit between Dame Lillard and Giannis. And I think if you like played out this season 100 times, the way things went, even though they're the three seed, even though they won a lot of games, this feels like a bottom 10 to 20% outcome.
Yeah. I think LeBron tricked all of us into thinking that building a 2K roster works.
Yep.
Because he's done it a couple of times. It really doesn't. And then Kevin Durant, like, that's not the same situation. He just went to a winner. That was a great player that went to a franchise that probably would have been favored to win the title without him. Outside of those two examples, which are different in their makeup, this process doesn't really work. Like, let's just jam stars together and the organic build, especially in today's NBA where there's so many good teams. We're going 1 through 8 in both conferences where you can make a case for anybody to make a little bit of noise in the playoffs. If you're not deep and cohesive and if you want to do it long term, create sort of a longevity to your build, you have a really hard time staying competitive in the NBA. These guys, the chemistry doesn't click right away. Some of these guys turn into dinosaurs overnight. We're seeing it with Dame. We're seeing it with Klay Thompson. It's tough. It's tough to build a roster that way. And they tried, and I credit them for it. And like anybody else, I thought it was going to work, and it's not.
We're going to learn a lot about this team, I think, early in game one, right? Alex called it a must-win for the Bucks, must-win game one. I'm on that path. They have to win one of the first two, if we're assuming Giannis is missing both of those games. But this is the opportunity for Dame to wash away his sins from the regular season, right? It's like, if there was ever a time for Damian Lillard to pull out a 52-point game with 8 3-pointers, this would be the time, right? I mean, this is why you have Dame Lillard, because you know, obviously the plan is never to be without Giannis in the playoffs, but if you are without Giannis, you need that guy who could conceivably carry you in a matchup against a kind of mid to upper level team like Indiana. It's like, if you're going into a series against Boston without Giannis, you're not winning. You know that. But it's conceivable that Milwaukee could at least get a split in this series. If not win both games, it's not crazy. They're at home. They could win both games without Giannis. And you have Dame for these exact situations. You know, last year, if you're in this situation, you're not saying, all right, Jrue Holiday, go get us 40 and win this game. Like, that's not what he does. This is what Dame Lillard does. So I'm very anxious to see. I'm not optimistic about it, but I'm anxious to see if Lillard rises to the occasion in this spot.
And back to the other side of the equation. You know, I'm already sort of writing their obit, but they could just turn things on and Damian Lillard could turn back the clock and be Portland Dame. And if that's the case, then we'll all look and go, oh, look, another team that just sort of coasted during the regular season and turned it on at the right time. It happens. It happened last year. The team that represented the East was one of those. They just didn't have as much hype as the Milwaukee Bucks do. So there's two different ways this story can go, and you can already see the way that we will frame the discussion in whichever way this – either the regular season is nonsense – or this was never going to work, and we tried to tell you all season. Whichever way it goes, we already have the topic laid out.
All right. This is a good note to end on. I did just see a tweet, by the way, that said they should have let Klay Thompson light the beam last night. Mean.
That's cold.
Funny.
That's cold.
But also very mean. All right. Yeah, we'll wrap it up here, man. This was a good preview of what we'll see tonight. We'll keep digging in on round one throughout the week. We'll have Rick and Dr. A back on the pod tomorrow. Keep bringing you on the SXM show as well. Might have to get you on the NBA SXM show to preview one of these Magic games as well. But we'll keep doing these throughout the playoffs. We'll give you game recaps. We'll give you game previews. We'll mix in, you know, some 2024-25 fantasy advice as well. Brandon, good chatting with you as always, man. I probably won't see you until we have at least one Orlando-Cleveland game under our belt. So best of luck to your Orlando Magic this weekend.
Thank you. And enjoy the NBA playoff holiday weekend.